Hello and welcome to another episode of 10,000 Hours. I'm one of your hosts, Grant Spanier.
That makes me your other host, Vince Cauchy.
And I'm your third host. No, we only have two.
Just two of us.
Two is sufficient, I think. Actually, I think it's great. And you're listening to episode 34 with a collaborator of mine and now friend. I think I'll call him friend, Mr. Jake Jorgovin, who does a variety of things, makes a bunch of content. I was on his show, the Creative Freelancer podcast, which is an awesome show, and I had a blast doing that one. And he was kind enough to join us on our show, and we were talking about fail-proof as a general concept. Hey, Vince?
We were indeed talking about fail-proof, an interesting topic, kind of unlike anything we've touched on the show before. Basically, the premise is, how do you set up a creative endeavor or a project that, in other words, can't go wrong? Meaning, not necessarily that it guaranteed success by every metric or whatever, but basically, how do you start something that you're going to feel good about and you're going to learn and grow from no matter what the result is?
Something where it's like the process is enjoyable and is a success in and of itself.
The journey is the destination.
Oh, wow. Eloquent, poetic, beautiful.
Is that a fortune cookie?
Yeah, it is. We're eating Chinese food as we record this intro. Speaking of Chinese food, I'd like to thank today's sponsor, SaneBox. And Chinese food comes in a box most often, and I see this as my segue. And SaneBox is a tool that I use every day. As you know, Vince, I've talked about it a lot to you, huh?
You have, and on several shows.
On several shows, and listeners will know it is a tool that basically gets email out of the way. It simplifies your email system. It puts what's important in front of you, and it's trainable. It's something I advocate. It's very cheap. It's totally worth it. It saves me several hours every single week, which, especially when you're a freelancer or somebody whose time, the charging for time or the equivalent, it's an incredibly valuable tool. I would advocate you go check it out at sanebox.com/10khrs. Hoo-ha!
Thank you.
Was that good?
Thank you for that.
I killed it.
Thank you for that noise, and thank you, Sanebox. And thanks for listening. Episode 34, Fail-Proof.
Great to be on the same page with a co-creator of a thing, you know?
You're not.
Because it. Thank you, Vince. You're so kind. You're going to learn that in the course of the show. Vince is a kind, kind man.
What a generous man. That's what all the ladies say.
Vinny, I would typically, at the start of the show, ask you what you're wearing, but I won't because we're doing in-studio recording right now.
And you can see.
So I don't need to.
Everything's from H&M, except for the t-shirt, which we got on Creatives Go West.
All of it?
The pants and the shirt and the briefs.
Okay, because the pants are on the floor. I don't know why.
All right. But what I'm working on, Grant...
Yes, is the real question, of course.
Big news, actually, at Yamamoto this week. Our CCO, my beloved boss, someone I have a lot of respect for, announced that he will be stepping down to take a new position.
He passed away.
Nope. He and his wife will be taking a position in Philadelphia. So anyway, at any rate, that means there's going to be new leadership in Yamamoto. And what that means is I have been working on my resume, just in case. You know, the world of advertising is one where there is a lot of motion within and between agencies, and nothing is ever assured. So
it's tumultuous.
Exactly. Now is as good a time as ever. That is also true. Not germane to the conversation at hand, but it's very true.
Yeah.
So I've been working on, as you know, my website's still under construction. We are working on that together.
Yep.
And now my resume is up to date as well. So that's what I'm working on. Grant, if you would do the honors for me and say what you're working on, that would be great.
Okay, yeah, I will do that. And I will also say, if you ever need a letter of recommendation or an oration,
if you want me to record something just recommending you, or if you'd like a, even like a poster recommendation. Actually, if I was going to do anything for you, I think it would probably be just like, it'd be a postcard of recommendation, because it's like I could send it anywhere. And
you know that, I mean, I know you're like a quarter joking, but it actually means a lot. I might hit you up for a recommendation. Cool. That
I got you, homie.
I appreciate that, man.
Hopefully our editor will add in the Nux sound effect.
We just Nux, so
we'll put that in there. I am mostly working on, man, I just wrapped up a couple of like presentation design things.
Sure.
So that's like a small part of my business, or like a decent part of my business, which is like designing keynote presentations.
Absolutely.
For people who are giving them.
Surprisingly vital. And, like, too few people spend too little time on making it appropriate.
Yeah, I mean, it's a huge opportunity business-wise, and it's also, like, a huge opportunity presentation-wise to, like, do something good. And it's really hard to make a good presentation. So I was doing some of that, and I was also doing some branding work for that, and I will happily say this now, because I'm like deep enough into it. As you know, my MO is, I've been jamming on this screenplay adaptation of a short story I wrote a while ago. And I've been like really iterating it, and I'm pretty excited. And I'm also working on something that is going to segue the shit out of us.
It's going to be very pertinent.
It's going to be too segue-ish almost, but, It's a Skillshare class, something that I've been working on with a real smart fella, somebody who was originally, I think actually I came across his work by way of Monsieur Dane Sanders, who I was on his
friend
show.
Of the show.
Yeah, friend of the show. He was on our show. What was he? Episode 32?
Yep.
And I was on his show, which is Converge, Business of Creativity podcast. I don't know what episode I was on his. I know all of ours, but I don't know his.
I mean, that would be pretty impressive if you did.
I want to say like 22 or something.
I want to say 18.
Okay.
That's we'll fair. Show notes it.
Yeah, we're going to show notes it. So I was on his show, and that's how I came across this fella, who is a very talented, well, but then I was additionally connected by someone else, blah, blah, blah. Very talented mofo. He's a dude who makes stuff. Okay, step one,
he helps other people make stuff.
Yes, which is like a very vital step in this whole equation. And yeah, I've been working with this guy. I mean, he does a lot of web design stuff.
He's a writer.
He's writing. He's putting out a ton of content,
and he has a podcast of his own,
the Creative Freelancer Show, which I was on
episode 5.
Wow, you're killing it.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but yes. Without further
episode
ado,
5, that's right.
Perfect. Our guest today, and I'm excited to introduce you, Jake Jorgevin. Thank you so much for joining us today, man.
Thank you guys for having me. And you got the episode number right.
Awesome. I feel I'm riding really high right now, so I'm just going to parlay that. What are you working on right now, Jake?
I've got a handful of about 3 client projects I'm working on. 2 boring kind of corporate ones that are paying the bills, and 1
paying the bees.
And 1 really fun one that I'm doing for another client. But then the beast of the Skillshare course that I'm working on with you, Grant, that's been quite a blast over the past few months of we've been kind of putting this together. So
yeah, man.
It's been a lot of fun.
This homie.
Hey, and been writing a book on that.
Whoa, okay. Well, before we go, the thing I was going to say before we go on to, what's the book about?
So I'm writing a book on, it's called The Creative's Guide to Freelancing. And so it's basically, I don't know, like my first kind of first full length book. And it's kind of me just teaching everything I've learned on doing creative work and making a living from it for the past, I guess, about 8 years of my life, and just kind of compiling that all into a book right now. So that's what I'm working on there right now.
Exciting, man. And now before we go on, could you talk about the Skillshare quick for a minute? It's something that you're both a part of, and it's topical. So I'd like to learn a little bit more about it.
Well, I mean, but prior to that, even I think is a good, I couldn't tell you which, like, I'm sure we had a hostful or there's another episode that is very pertinent to this, but it's like, besides just getting connected through mutual people, I think something, it was like, we got on the line and it was like, oh yeah, like this is a homie that knows what's up. I mean, like some, yeah. no, some context.
Exactly.
I mean,
you had a common thread, a common vibe.
I've never met Jake still to this day, but like, very much trust him and we're working on some stuff that we both really care about, you know? And so I don't know exactly what the lesson or point is there beyond
personality transcends proximity.
Yeah. I mean, like, people get it. And if you get that they get it, that's a pretty cool thing. And it's great to connect with people in that way.
Yeah. I mean, I think we got introduced through some friends and we both had a new Dane as well. And so we had these kind of like multiple points of connection and we just got on a call and we're just like, I like you. Yeah. This is good.
The rest is history.
Let's do something together. Yeah, I think that's how it started.
Yeah. How a lot of projects start, actually, you know?
Yeah. And speaking of starting a project.
Yeah.
Like many topics on our show, this is kind of what it's about. And today we're talking about a, I don't know, would you call it a strategy or a mindset? Or I guess maybe just an awareness of, you could have about when you start a project?
I think it starts as like a strategy because you're like very, you're like, oh, I want to do this. Or well, it's either a strategy or a philosophy. And those two are so like closely intertwined.
They're ingrained. So it doesn't even matter how we define it. But basically, the idea we're talking about today is fail-proof. And what does it mean for a plan to be fail-proof?
Mm-hmm.
And is it something we should strive for? And making sure we define it in a way that is actually constructive. So this was an idea that you and I think Jake as well vibed on in the past. And so I was really interested when you brought it up as a show topic. I want to hear your guys' initial opinions on what it means to be fail-proof.
Jake, you're still there, yeah?
Yeah, I'm still here.
I figured. He's a patient man. He really is. No, I mean, I really respect that. So the reason I first even like had considered something like this as a topic and talking to Jake especially about it is like we had a conversation, Jake, after we got I don't know at what point, and of course we're still defining the thing and we haven't shipped it yet, but we were talking about like, okay, so like we had a very real conversation. Like if this does not make money, like we're both still pretty happy, right? Cause that's not the point here. That was a conversation, right?
Yeah. I mean, that was one of the points where we just kind of looked at it and we were like, yeah, that's not really why either of us are doing this. That doesn't even, you know,
exactly.
It's not even really a thought that ever crossed
doesn't
my mind.
Factor into the decision.
No, exactly. I mean, but also, you know, we had a conversation about it just to like clarify, but I think it was very clear from the outset that's not why we're doing it. And so I think a lot of what we're talking about right now is like, oh, defining motivations and then defining what those motivations mean in an outcome sense. So to us, it's like, I don't know. I mean, I think there are two points on that, which is we both have a desire to, like help people and I mean, in a very hedonistic sense, there's a sense of pleasure in that. Right.
I mean, absolutely.
Pleasure in that, you know, in helping people. But, I think in another sense, it's like, yeah, but that is like all we need out of this, you know? Like, I don't need monetary compensation for this. I don't need, but not in like hyper, like charitable.
It's not
but,
a charitable thing, but it's more
it
of a motivation
like
thing,
yeah,
right?
Yeah,
exactly,
yeah.
Exactly. It's just being honest with yourselves that your reward is not monetary primarily.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yeah. I think it comes down to like once you kind of know a why behind the work that you're doing, that once you kind of have that like that underlying motivation that's bigger than the money, you know, that puts you as motivation. And I think that's what makes it fail-proof is when you have a serious why behind what you're doing.
So I'd be curious to hear your why.
So my why, I guess behind everything I'm doing, I guess I've been producing media. in some form or fashion since I was, I think, around 14 or 15 when I picked up Photoshop, and then I started doing audio editing, and I was always producing media in some form or fashion, recording bands, doing graphic design, doing something like that. And I realized really early on that what I loved was producing media, and just the fact that as like one person, you can create this message that goes out and creates an impact, or it entertains like hundreds and thousands and millions of people. And at the time I noticed that because I would record these local bands in St. Louis, these hardcore screamo bands, and I'd watch them get MySpace plays. And that was just really exciting. I was like, wow, people are listening to this, these recordings I've made. That's so cool. Mm-hmm. But like ultimately, like that idea of being one person and producing media that can shape someone's life, that can teach them something, that can entertain them or educate them or be this like pivotal moment that changes them in some way. Like that's always been my why, and why I've started podcasting, started blogging, started creating, is because like you have this ability to just create something and share it and totally influence someone's life. And that's underlying the why behind everything I do, and a large part of the why behind this project, I guess, what makes it fail-proof.
That's awesome. A great answer. And I think it highlights kind of the reason why fail-proof is an idea at all. It's fail-proof because even if you, and it's weird because to be fail-proof, you have to identify like a failure in a general sense. Like, mm-hmm. How could this fail? And how could it, why can it not fail?
Well, yeah, what are the societal perceptions of failure? Or what
bingo.
Yeah, yeah.
Exactly. And so failure, I guess, would be like, okay, you didn't maybe get the outreach you wanted. Maybe it didn't make any money, et cetera, et cetera. But it will have been a success to you both because someone out there was helped by it.
Mm-hmm.
And you enjoyed doing it yourself.
Well, I mean, and we could, in a very real way. So let's scale it back. Let's scale
sure,
back for a second.
Please.
So we're talking about fail-proof. We're talking about ideas, projects, anything that, how do you set up a project let's just like generalize projects. Okay. That could be a business. That could be a film. That could be a fucking,
it could be a single assignment for a single client.
Yeah. It can go, it doesn't matter,
across the entire scale.
So how can we fail-proof our project or, our things, let's just call it things, okay?
Yeah.
Okay. So let's just define our motivations and our successes, and let's kind of go from there. But, you know, I think if you, that's very base level. And if you want to go to the next level, it's to say that, so here are my motivations. Here's what I'm trying to get out of this.
Sure.
And actually, in practice, okay, which is much harder than any of this theory bullshit we're talking about, you know? But okay, I'm gonna give a very real world example from today.
Okay.
From today, how I'm trying to fail-proof engagement, because I think that's where it starts, right? How do you fail-proof anything? Okay, first figure out what you want. Okay, that's like, actually, okay, Vince, let me take a stand right now and say,
please,
it's not all about self-awareness.
A rare opinion for this show to have.
And I'm actually going to stand by this. I'm going to say it's not all about self-awareness. It's about expression of desire. It's about self-expression. So it's very easy for me to figure out what I want.
Sure.
To a certain degree. But it's way harder for me to say what I want because oftentimes that's where the real tension comes in.
That's a great insight, actually.
So,
yeah,
so really good. Yeah, honestly, man. So for example, I'm talking to someone today about this particular person has some very good connections and people that he thinks I could work with from an artist standpoint to do some music video things. And it's like, you know, he has this person, he has this person, he has this person. It's not like he owns them, but this is, you know, who he's connected with and people he's talking about. And it's like, this person has like a really good audience. This person has a really good whatever. And it's like, I could very much make a shitty decision. And honestly, my gut tells me whether or not that's a good decision or not. And that's like a much bigger topic, but what I'm trying to say is it's very easy to just say yes or to say like, oh yeah, yeah, let's do this when it's not a good fit.
Right.
You know, that's so much easier than saying, no, that's not a good fit. And especially when it's like, it's either this or nothing.
Right. You know? It's not when there's no middle ground, you really have to put your chips in the middle.
Well, it's just yes or nothing. Of course you're going to say yes. Right. And even almost like unconventional wisdom, more rebel wisdom would tell us to say, like, go for it.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that's a sexy idea. But like you said, it can be an irresponsible idea, especially if you know already internally that your heart's not going to be in it because it's not a good fit. And you just say yes to kind of maintain the happy layer. That is irresponsible.
And all right, so here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to set the stage, and then I'm going to turn it back to you, young Jordan.
Mr. Jake, yes. I'll get you back in the conversation in a mere minute.
So, okay. So there's this thing, like, this idea of fail-proof, which is, like, if we're talking about people like us, if I may generalize us, risk-takers, people who are, like, very much pushing against that idea.
Sure.
And so it's almost like my natural inclination is to say, fail-proof, fuck you. You know what I mean? Like, what is that? What does that mean?
Uh-huh.
You know, but I think what we're talking about is like, we're talking about the sort of fail-proof that is not conventionally seeable, conventionally visible. And we're talking about the sort of fail-proof that gives us the confidence to take the stupid risks we take.
Sure.
And I'm going to turn that to Jake and just ask you about sort of the lenses you look at your projects through, or the lenses you look at your time through, you know, like, how do you determine what you're going to work on, what you're going to ship, you know, whatever it's like, what does that mean to you in terms of fail proof? How do you make that stuff fail proof?
Yeah. So for me, a way to make things fail proof, I guess, is to have the, you know, not all of my projects I would say are fail proof.
Mm-hmm.
But the ones that I'm passionate about are. And I have, you know, my freelancing work, the client work that I do. And I would say that that's not quite very fail-proof at all. It's very much, in a lot of ways, a lot of the clients I take on are a way for me to maximize income while minimizing the amount of time that I work, so that I can focus more time on projects that I am passionate about. And having that, I don't know, that distinction between, okay, the motivation for this project is purely to make money, so that way that I can live a comfortable life. And the motivation for this project is purely to make an impact. Like, that goes, I think that's a big part for me. Like, there's this, I'm on Simon Sinek's, like, weekly or daily little newsletter. And there's just one quote that just has stuck with me for a really long time of, you know, if you aim to make money, you're going to make money. If you aim to make an impact, you're going to make an impact. And that's really simple, but I think it's really true, especially when you look at motivations for projects. And so for me, I guess, you know, not all my projects are fail-proof. Some of them are there for the money, but they're there for the money to support the ability for me to work on my fail-proof projects that are really there for the passion that hopefully someday make money.
So let me take a step back there, though. I mean, I think to me, okay, to me, we are like super, super aligned on that. And this is something even I was talking to Vince about earlier, which is a couple of projects I'm working on right now, which are, I'm passionate about, not just because of the money, but kind of because I'm passionate about the idea that this buys me more time or more freedom to do the other stuff. And that's kind of, I guess, well, that's a whole nother level talking about like what that, no, really.
Yeah.
And I think we should. But, it's just this like the concept that,
well, is it that we have to live with the fact that some projects can't be fail-proof?
No, yes, exactly. That's what it is.
Or is it an ideal that we can strive to make even our,
I think,
like,
that is
day-to-day
is what I was thinking.
Monetary projects are simple stuff. Like, for me, my client work, for you, you're like smaller scale stuff. You're bill paying projects, to put like that moniker on it.
Sure.
Can those still be fail proof? Can we strive to make them fail proof? Or on a meta level, is acknowledging them as bill paying projects make them already fail proof?
Yes, exactly. That's what I was trying to get at. And I was like searching for the terminology and searching for the idea, really. Is that's what it is to me. It, like, most people don't accept that. you know, especially in our stage or in our sphere, you know?
Yeah, dude, you can see it. I see it all the time, is people unwilling to compromise even on minor stuff within my agency. And Jake, I would love to hear you weigh in on this stuff, because you touched on some things in your previous kind of paragraph that I really kind of related to this topic. But I see people and young people picking every battle and not wanting to give in to even minor sacrifices because they have not made their client project fail-proof.
This is the next stage of stuff that we should talk about.
Right. They didn't know how to make it fail-proof. There's a way for them to fail, and that is having to compromise their creative vision. Now,
fighting the wrong battles.
Exactly. Is this the hill you want to die on? Yeah. Is what I ask them. And if the answer is always yes, then you're going to die a lot of deaths. So, Jake, do you think you can make these? I mean, you just drew the distinction a couple minutes ago. So, do we have it completely wrong? Or do you kind of see where we're coming from?
Yeah. And so, I mean, there are like, I don't know, there are clients that I hate and clients that I love. And there are, I don't know, I think whenever you involve a client, there is no way to make it fully fail proof. Like, I had a client that asked me, you know, we were, you know, a good portion of the way through the design process. And then the comment comes, can we make the whole background black? And right. It's just like, oh God. Oh, you know, it's just like,
that's perfect.
Invert everything and like, just, you know, and like, so there's, I don't know. I think you can always have clients that just hit a point where you just get so fed up with the battle, or just so frustrated with the process that it almost becomes a failure in a sense.
Sure. Yeah.
But I still think when you look at it as still in the lens of, okay, like I'm just going to put my head down, get this shit done, and then get this project behind me, and just remember you're doing this for the money. And as long as you're happy with the money that you're making for it, it at least gives you some motivation to it. But if you're not happy with the money and you're not happy with the work you're doing, then you're just going to be,
that's success proof is what that is.
Yeah, no. So let me throw this at you guys. And this is something you sparked right here, which is like, it has been core to my ideals, and it's sort of waned and waxed and is really now come back to the core.
It's ebbed and flowed.
It's in tide, out tide. It's the moon is going all sorts of places, as it were. But the point is that, okay, so there are a couple of points here that really ultimately end in this. One is that, you know, shut the fuck up and stop complaining. Okay.
Okay.
So there's one point there.
Is that a personal directive to me?
No. Vin. that's to myself.
Oh, okay.
You know, I think that's to myself over the last 6 months, a year, whatever. I don't know. But it's something I've embodied more and more. And then number two, in support of that and very directly related to that, is like, stop blaming people who aren't at fault.
Okay.
And that point, you know, then leads into point three. Okay, we're going to keep going.
The super point.
Yes. Well, and there are going to be a few super points. But the super point is to say, like, you can't expect people to know things that they don't know. And so stop projecting on them. Okay. And so your client doesn't know everything, and stop, like, projecting things that they couldn't know onto your client and then blaming them for not knowing what they couldn't know.
Right.
You know?
Okay. I'm tracking you.
So it's sort of like a relationship-based thing, and this is something even you and I have talked about before, which is like, okay, you start living in this whole alternate world that your client isn't living in or your relationship isn't living in, and it's to say like they don't have any context for whatever you're putting on them, and you might be mad and they might be wrong, but you need to say something, okay?
Exactly. And so I mean how it pertains back to fail proofing is that making these assumptions is a really good way to not fail proof your project.
Well, and here's what I would say, Vin, man.
Yeah, please.
To further that is to say, if you want to fail proof stuff, you need to stop creating
opportunities.
Success. No. Even beyond that, stop creating metrics or like bases for any sort of judgment on them, and start putting on yourself. Honestly, man. To me,
that's a great point.
Like, once you start putting the weight in your client, in your relationship, in your anyone else, and you give them the opportunity to tell you if you succeeded. Like, that is when you give up control.
You're totally right.
You give up control of whatever success is. And so I think to fail-proof anything, you accept what you're doing, right? I mean,
dude, you're totally right. And before I come in with a quick point, I would like Jake to reflect on that.
Sorry, Jake.
That's a big chunk of info, and I'm sure he's got at least some thoughts on it, or maybe not. But
no. So I definitely do, and what's been sticking out in my mind from this is when I look at the fail-proof projects that I work on or that I do, none of them, or few of them, are collaborations or client work. But the more so the fail-proof things that I'm working on are like this course that we're working on together, or like the blog articles that I'm putting out, or the book that I'm writing, even if it doesn't make a ton of money, even if it's not a huge success, if it impacts a few people's lives, then that's fail-proof. And I think the ability to control the project and not have it be at someone else's budget or someone else's mercy, I think that helps in a way make it more fail-proof. And you have your client, your work that you do for clients. But I don't know. I think for me, the fail-proof projects that I look at are more so the ones that I do not for the money, that I do for myself or some deeper motivation.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think you guys have both touched on a really important point, and that's that if you invest your heart, your soul, and your vision of success in some sort of external factor, that's asking for the potential of failure. There's an idea in game theory, and it's the idea of results-oriented versus decision-oriented happiness.
Probabilistic, man.
Exactly.
That's a Nate Silver,
For sure. Now, results-oriented is the bad version because the results are unpredictable.
Right.
Other things, external factors weigh in on the results, and you can do everything right on a project, and it can go bad for external reasons, and the results can be bad. And if that's how you gain your worth, that is a great way to always be disappointed. But if you are a decision-oriented person, and in game theory, this means like playing the game the right way, it doesn't matter if you win or lose. If you played it right, you should be happy. It should be a success to you. And that can be parlayed into the creative process. If you go about the project in the right way, and you have the right, like, if you're at peace with your internal approach to doing the project, then it should be a success no matter if the result is disappointing or not.
There are a lot of nuances in there. But if we were... But if we were going to oversimplify it further, then it really would be like... It's kind of like a reality versus a like bullshit approach.
All comes down to that.
No, but saying, man, it's like, okay, in a very totally oversimplified way, it's to say like, you bet big on a seven deuce, and then you hit a royal, you hit a full house, and you won the World Series of Poker. Versus like
you win out on pocket aces and you lost.
Yeah.
Even if things turn out well, that doesn't necessarily mean.
But if you went all in on pocket aces, that was still a good move, and you lost. Like, get over
exactly.
it.
Exactly. That's exactly right.
Find peace in your decisions, really.
That's what fail-proofing is, right? It's not making sure failure can't happen.
Yeah.
It's having...
Yes, exactly.
It's preempting the project with peace in the failure. Right. Now...
Right, Jake?
That's right.
Now, Jake, I do...
If you were to disagree, you'd be in real trouble.
Because we riffed pretty hard there. But I do... It parlays perfectly into a point I've been wanting to make since we started the conversation. And that is... I think it is wrong to take this approach to mean that you shouldn't set aspirational goals for a project.
That's lazy.
Exactly. Now, some people might listen to this and say fail-proofing. Okay, that's mitigating expectations. That is, that's making sure don't shoot for the moon, shoot for the tree line, right? Now, Jake,
to me, it's don't shoot for my head. I'm serious.
No, I know. I know what you're saying. But I would like to hear Jake's opinion. No, absolutely. On what? How do you think we balance this idea of like making sure we're okay with failure and we respect the potential
like,
failure?
Like how do you come to terms with your decisions?
Right. But how do you also make sure it doesn't limit the potential growth of a project?
I mean, I think you've got to just look at like your ultimate motivations for it and, you know, knowing what is driving you, and that even if you achieve a small part of what's driving you, I mean, like, so for writing a book, that it makes an impact in some people's lives. But like, you know, I obviously you want it to make an impact in as many people's lives as possible. So, you know, you set these aspirational goals of how many people are going to read it or how many people are going to, you know, be impacted by it. But ultimately, like, you can't, you know, you want to set aspirational goals because you want to aim big, but you know, it becomes fail-proof when you just look at it and you remember that if, you know, if you impact just a handful of people's lives, you know, it's still worth doing.
So,
and you know, you set the big goals, but you know, you may not always hit the moon, but if, you know, if you still go pretty damn far, you're close.
So correct me if I'm wrong, but you're saying like, as long as your motivations are correct and that your approach from the get-go is correct, it's really inconsequential how aspirational your goals are. Because falling anywhere on the spectrum, as long as you fall in the right way, has been a success. Is that like kind of what you're saying?
Yeah, as long as you make some impact in the direction that you're going in. You know, it may not be as big of an impact as you want to go, but as long as you make something, you learn from it, there's positive gains from it. It's, you know, it's helping someone or it's helping you achieve your goals. Then, you know, then if I look at it, if you look at it that way, I think it's fail-proof.
Great. I mean, I think we're aligned in that, like, in that sense, I think we are gravitating toward or maybe circling around the same thing repeatedly. And that being, if you understand your motivations and your motivations are correct, and correct not meaning like some altruistic correct meaning aligned with what you want out of your future, your career, et cetera, et cetera. It's almost impossible to fail. It's impossible to fail if you start the right way.
Yeah. So Grant, I have a question for you then. What are your motivations for starting this course?
Mm. Okay, so this is actually like a very pertinent question. And I feel like to an extent it's like something we talked about like in ways just like when we're getting going with this. But okay, so something I come back to over and over again, especially something I like really geeked out on after doing that Seth course, you know, or the Seth project and
yeah,
and a thing is like really thinking about the magnitude and the potential of it's very much a fucking Haley Joel Osment idea, you know, the dude, the OG dude who perpetuated the idea, paying it forward. Right?
Yep.
Okay. In modern culture. Okay. Haley Joel Osment was like essentially Seth Godin's like little kid.
His spirit child.
His spirit child. No, it's just this idea that like, okay, no matter what you do as let's put it quote unquote as a thought leader or somebody who's like writing or making or whatever, it's just like the biggest impact you can have is to enable and empower other people to make stuff that enables and empowers. And it's this like weird thing. But to me, the things that have gotten me most excited have like turned me on to the people who have like gotten me most excited and like made me want to make stuff that they made, you know? And so whatever format that is, like getting people, it's very much a teacher mentality. You know, but in a new age way, I think.
And I'm glad you said that.
Okay.
Because, I mean, as absolutely enlightening as this conversation has been, and I don't say that lightly, because we've really
You don't say that enlightenly.
No.
What?
We have pretty good, actually. We have riffed hard so far.
We riffed so hard
that poor Jake probably just wants to get off the show right now.
Are you good, Jake?
No, dude, I'm loving this.
Awesome. I'm having a great time as well. And speaking of mentorship and imparting wisdom, and paying it forward. I'd like to talk about a different kind of mentor. Maybe you would call it a sensei.
Wow.
Maybe you would call it someone who leads you through life and shows you the way through the lens of martial arts and kung fu.
Whoa.
Now, this is a topic that I love to talk about. It's kung fu. And I would like to hear... I'm going to leave it really, really open-ended.
Jeez.
When it comes to kung fu, the martial arts, karate, maybe you practiced that when you were younger. Jake, what comes to mind?
So what comes to mind, I guess, is when I read a whole lot of books and... I listen to a whole lot of podcasts, watch YouTube channels, all that stuff. But when I think of the senseis, the masters, I don't think, you know, there's no guru or perfect person that has the formula. But I think it just comes down to whenever I find someone that I just like what they're doing, I like their style, I like their mindset, their motivations, I just get kind of hooked on someone for a while. And I just absorb everything I can from them. And there's this quote from Alan Weiss. He's got this good book on just kind of freelancing and consulting. One of the things is like he talks about is with like a mentor or a coach is you want to learn from someone that's, you know, you don't want to learn from the guy sitting. When you're thinking about like a mentor, it's like the person who's in front of you on the ski slopes, you know, like 20 meters ahead of you just going down the slopes. Not the guy that's like sitting in the ski shack, just, you know, telling you about what you should do and, you know, selling you.
Follow by example, not by word.
That's a whole other topic. We should definitely delve.
We should definitely write that down and talk about that with a different guest. Sorry, Jake, but thanks for the idea.
Yeah.
you bring up a good point and one that I'll force you to go back onto the topic of kung fu with. And that's that, like, you see in all the fictional representations, the master, despite his age, is always also very well practiced. He's also a great fighter. Now, this is important. It's pertinent to your point because the hero will usually be resistant to the plain advice of the sensei until he sees the sensei in action. Even though you tried to be too on topic for the off topic talk, personally speaking,
I gotta say, Jake, too on topic,
too on point, too smart for our show.
I should have brought out some kung fu movie reference quotes.
No, it was good. It was really good.
But you were actually really on point. But yeah, that's a good thing to talk about because in the popular representations,
that's exactly
what happens.
What you're jumping to, though, is, and I think this is okay for us to discuss. Mm-hmm. In this is imposter syndrome to a certain degree.
Please,
A good friend who I won't name. It was Steffi Cohen,
friend of the show.
She did that stuff or the Seth project, the Steph project.
Freudian slip. The Seth project with you.
Yeah. Yes. But she was talking recently about like. Oh man, I feel like I'm like doing too much talking and not enough doing and whatever.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, and I had 2 points there. Well, I had 1 point that I expressed and 1 point that I didn't. 1 point that I expressed was what you're doing, just like a karate master does, is you are dispelling wisdom and inspiration that enables and empowers and pushes a whole new, not necessarily age-wise generation, but a whole new generation,
a new class
of karate masters. Okay, and on a whole nother level, it's just like on a shittier level to me. Okay, well, hold on, not a shittier level to this person. Okay, because what you're doing is really good. Okay.
Right.
But then the fear that she was expressing, and I think it's okay that I'm saying this, I hope. Sorry, Steffi. But really, though, like that thing to me is something that has like actually driven me to create a lot of stuff.
Absolutely.
And is in a really almost like potentially toxic way sometimes is like the thing that makes me want to make stuff because I don't want to succumb to
fear of imposter syndrome has driven you to maybe create even more than
and almost not even like I guess I shouldn't even have labeled it as imposter syndrome right away. It's almost like there's imposter syndrome, and then there's like fear of like becoming just like sensei.
Sure.
Right? I mean, exactly. And so sensei occasionally has to get back in the ring, right?
Exactly. Dude, that is extremely insightful, because you even hear it in advertising where your CCO, maybe your ECD or your creative director, is unhappy because they don't get to do the design, or yeah, they don't get to do the writing
anymore.
They're
just saying yes or no now.
They've
right?
become the mentor, and they've lost the ability to fight but not the will to fight. Man, this has been the most on-topic, off-topic so far. So I gotta ask you guys, do you have a favorite martial arts discipline or a favorite martial arts movie maybe?
I definitely do.
Jake?
I would say comes to mind is Hero, that Jet Li movie that Quentin Tarantino
truly great movie.
On.
Yeah, that was awesome. Yeah, I will watch awesome. That any night of the week. I'm a gigantic kung fu
we
movie
should,
fan.
We should are there any like streaming services where we could watch it together?
Oh yeah, I think that one's on Netflix actually.
No, but so you and I could watch it. Jake, could you plug in? I would like a shared watching experience.
Yeah, well, I mean, why not? Let's stream it. Let's Skype it and record it.
Cool.
It's on. Grant, do you have a favorite discipline or movie?
Well, as you know, I'm a Subacto red belt with two stripes.
No, Jesus, really? No, I did not know that.
Are you serious?
You're a what?
Subacto. It's a Korean discipline. You really had no idea?
I can't believe you haven't told me this, actually. I am thoroughly impressed.
Are you serious?
Yeah. No, I'm serious. Wow. I'm dead serious, dude.
Yeah, this was actually a hang up for me for a while, because I was like, I had quit karate to pursue hockey.
Sure.
And I quit it like 4 months or something like that before my black belt.
You're kidding.
No, I'm serious.
Wow. And wait, what's this other discipline? Subacto?
Subacto. Yeah.
Yeah. What does this involve? What's it the art of? Is it general hand-to-hand?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's just like a general Korean, like, obviously not North, South Korean karate practice.
Sure.
I mean, it was essentially, it was like a lot of forms. So we did a lot of forms, and then we did hand-to-hand too in tournaments.
Wow, this isn't...
I did tournaments. Really have you seen my trophies, man?
I mean, Jesus, I feel like you could be giving me the long con right now. Are you being 100% sincere?
I'm so sincere right now.
Wow, this is... I didn't even know this when I had this off-topic in mind, so this is awesome.
That's crazy. Yeah, I should...
Beautiful.
I want to show you these not out of like
braggadocio.
But just like to show you these trophies. I have like
I would love to see
many, many trophies.
Wow, we're gonna show notes a picture of the trophies.
I probably Thanksgiving is when I would first get back.
So we probably won't, but imagine.
We'll get them eventually.
Wow, that is supremely interesting. That is awesome.
I had no idea that you had no idea.
I'm glad I got to learn that about you today. Bring it in. Hey, nice.
If you heard that on the audio, that was a hug.
It was a bro hug.
A brug.
Yep, if you will.
Sorry, Jake.
Did you know that about Grant?
Too much bro love here. Like, sorry, man. It's so hard. You're not right here.
Did you know Grant practiced martial arts?
I did not know. No, I had no idea.
Well, we're learning together then, Jake.
Wow. Rude.
I love everything Jet Li. And
sorry, I meant to turn it back to you.
No, that was so interesting.
I was so blown away by your...
I think Hero is a favorite of mine, but my favorite all-time movie is The Drunken Master with Jackie Chan. Literally doesn't get better than that. That is a true classic, a paradigm in the master-student story, and I implore you all to watch it. That is on Netflix. So we'll show notes it even.
Yeah, and if you don't, go to...
Just look it up. Drunken Master.
Yeah, just go to...
For sure. All right, Jake. I want to wrap things up. I want to bring us back home. And I want to first say that you've been an awesome guest, and I've had a lot of fun. I'm sure I speak for both of us.
1 to 10.
10. Easy. 10.00, because that's as high as it goes. But we like to wrap things up the same way every show. You might be familiar. We ask our guests two questions. The first being, how can our listeners support you, Jake Jorgvin? And two, if you wanted those same guests to take one thing away from your time on the show, what would it be?
So first, if you want to find out more about me or engage with me, you can go to jake-jorgvin.com. or probably just check the show notes, as my name is hard to spell.
Yeah, we will definitely show notes. It is. It's check not. The show notes. It's fairly. It's fairly phonetic.
Fairly, yeah. It's a little challenging.
It's P H A I R L Y. Fairly.
Don't listen.
Phonetic.
Ignore that. But how else?
We'll cut that out. Oh, we won't.
Yeah. So then the one thing to take away, I would say, would really just be on the idea of starting a creative project that matters, and just the simple aspect of just, you know your motivations, you know what, whenever you start anything, you start any project, you know what is motivating you and what's actually driving you to do this. Because, you know, if it's not money, if it's not impact, if you don't have the proper motivations behind it, I think that's when projects become failures. And if you want to make something fail-proof, you've got to have proper motivations behind it. And you just got to be real with yourself to know what those are. So that's my, I guess, my takeaway from this.
It's a good takeaway. It's one that's been echoed, I mean, again and again on this episode. So if you are looking for one keynote, that is, you know, be self-aware with your motivations. It's tough to get any clearer than that.
Yeah. Well, the only next step from that is, like, be clear with your motivations and then be clear. Well, at a certain level, it's taking control of your motivations. So I think one step to me is, okay, my motivations are, I need some sort of external gratification of a thing.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a very real thing. And it's something, honestly, man, I feel every day. And
I have that same feeling, yeah.
It would be near impossible to say, like, oh, I don't have any sort of reaction to gratification from an outside source. Okay, that's just dumb. That's not human.
You're not being honest.
Yeah. And so, but then the next step is to say, let me in some way, not in like a, you know, an OCD way or anything, but just like, let me in some way take control of those external factors and control my own success. And so to me, that is like, I don't know, just like not basing it on reaction necessarily. But, you know, you like taking stake in it. You put something out there, you want to take stake in it, and you want to like sort of react that, but not wrapping all of yourself in that, because you kill yourself, man. It's like too much.
Absolutely. And I think I would just want to add one last thing. And when it comes to understanding your motivation, it's not only reflecting on like some altruistic internal core motivation. Yeah. It's crafting a motivation.
Yeah.
It's building something that you can find success in multiple avenues. Mm-hmm. Like it's easy in a way to look inward and see what would make you happy. It's harder to craft a version of happiness that can exist. That can coexist with the project. Right.
Yeah.
Absolutely. But I think if you can start with self-reflection, I think you're already 9/10 of the way there.
Okay, so a good example, I feel like, which I'm very much about, is like, okay, let's give my example, like, right? So a good example would be like, okay, I very much get off to like the idea of people taking some sort of inspiration and like acting on it. Mm-hmm. So a good then goal would be like, oh, I want like 10 people like start projects based on this, right?
Right.
That is like a thing where it's like you can then externalize your motivation and separate it from your like selfish desires, like quote unquote selfish, because it's really not.
It's
like,
not right.
It's hedonistic. It's like getting off to like other people getting off, right? Okay, I'm just watching you mess with it. That's like okay. That was a bad joke. Hey, Jake, don't worry. We're going to cut that out.
We're not. We probably won't, but
there's a 0% chance we're going to cut that out.
As a last thought, do you want to reflect to that though, Jake?
Yeah, I mean, all I have is just thoughts of just, you know, masturbating, of other people masturbating in my head right now. So I'm trying to remember what the hell we were talking about before.
Killing it, man.
Oh my God.
But no, yeah, what the hell were we talking about?
We were just talking about like shared pleasure.
and crafting your own motivations, taking at least some sort of
listen, part in you got it. If you can't get off to other people getting off, then what are you doing? I think, and that's a final.
I think that's a great way to end it. Hey, and before we do wrap it, I just want to say thank you to
Jake.
But
you should wrap it before you get started.
Oh my gosh. This is going downhill fast, so we're going to get off the air in a matter of moments. But I do want to thank Jake for joining us, and all the way from Spain today, from outside of Barcelona, that's right?
Yep, that is correct. In a little town called Cardeo, about 40 minutes outside of Barcelona.
Hello. Wow. How do you like it over there in Spain?
It is the shit. Like this, if there is any one place I can live in the world.
Esta es la caca. ¿Hablas español?
Ah, I suck at Spanish. And they speak Catalan. They don't speak Spanish here. They speak Catalan, which is some
sí.
Crazy.
Estudié en Sevilla para seis.
Grant, yes. Grant speaks Spanish. Yeah. He often breaks into it on this show.
No, because I speak basic Spanish.
I mean, rest assured, Grant's the one that should feel like a dick. But why? What are you doing in Spain? Just out of curiosity.
So I've built my whole web design and freelancing career so I can kind of travel around, work anywhere. So
that's
the
what you're doing?
Past 10 months have been doing a lap around the world through Mexico, Asia, Europe, and now here in Spain before coming back to the
88
States.
88 days, right?
88. It's like 300 something days.
Okay.
Wow. Pretty cool. Wow. Hey, well, the jealousy is real, and I'm also proud of you, man. I'm glad that you could do that. And I really do appreciate you taking the time. I know it's late over there to join us, and it was a great episode.
Early.
I think early. It's just not a convenient time. I think I speak for both of us when I say it was a great episode and a great topic. So if you want to sign us off and
give us a classic Spanish
or English
Columbus.
Ship it.
Yeah. Or adios amigos. Ship it.